You're listening to the Big Guy Fantasy Sports Podcast Network. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Hello and welcome to episode 120 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Dots Pretzels. I am Nathan Dokken. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dokken. And I am joined by the newest member of Big Guy Fantasy Sports, Van Shipley. Congratulations, my friend.
Oh, why, thank you. Yes, I'm an official member. Someone on Twitter referred to me as a waiver wire pickup or something like that. So hopefully I'm a little more Cody Bellinger than, I don't know, someone who didn't work off of the waiver wire. Clever jokes abound on this edition of the Nasty Cast.
Absolutely.
Yes, happy to be a part of it.
Yes, it's good to have you officially aboard now and not just on the audio side. But in perhaps equally important news, you might have noticed out there in podcast land that we are sans Nate Miller this week. That's because he will not be the third member of the Nasty Trio moving forward. He's got a lot of family responsibilities, and he's going to be doing some different stuff on the website. And so you might have heard of this other guy who's going to be taking his place as the permanent third wheel in the Nasty Trio. It's Ron Rigney. Congratulations to you, sir.
Thank you, sir. I want to let Van know from a Big Guy Fantasy standpoint that I definitely think he would be a dynasty keeper instead of a waiver wire pickup. So,
Why, thank you. I'm excited to hear that.
Very welcome, sir.
You know, I've flashed some power in the past, but I'm more well known for my speed.
Well, five tool player is what I've heard. So
good.
He is definitely a tool.
Yeah. But I'm.
Yes. Well, I figured, you know, since you're not, we're not looking at you on an interim basis anymore. You're going to be, like I said, a permanent fixture. So I thought that it would behoove us to do a little get to know your host segment, if that pleases you.
Oh. So, sure, put me on the spot. I like it.
Yeah, I was totally going to send these to you and give you a heads up ahead of time, and I just based on it. So you have zero preparation, so you're just going to have to go by the seat of your pants.
Excellent. That's how I go through life anyway. Okay.
Yeah, assuming you have a seat in your pants. So we'll start on the entertainment side. What's your favorite movie of all time, Ron?
Oh, favorite movie. I don't – see, it's weird because I don't have a lot of favorites, but I have a lot of things I like. I mean, I'm like, an Anchorman, old school, that kind of comedy type stuff. A movie that I enjoy quite a bit, just because I enjoy Johnny Depp in it, is Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Interesting.
So that one's up there as well. But yeah, I'm not a huge movie guy, but I have a lot of them that are kind of go-tos. I have some 80s movies that are ones that I flip through. You know, you have those movies when you flip through the channels and you stop and watch them no matter what. Beetlejuice is one of those for me.
Wow.
It gets better. One of them I was thinking of the other day, because I saw an article that they're going to reboot this, is the cheesy 1988, I believe, Dolph Lundgren He-Man movie.
Yes.
Wow.
Because I was a big He-Man guy when I was
classic.
Younger. So yeah, I always stop on that one, as bad as it is, with a early on Courtney Cox is in that. I don't know if we're, you know, so.
Whoa, hey, but keep
Dolph
it,
Lundgren,
Pete.
I mean, you can't go wrong with Dolph Lundgren. So yeah, so.
I will break you.
Yeah. He's also very smart, in case you weren't aware.
Yes.
Is he?
Yeah,
he's
genius level intellect.
Yeah. So.
Brains and brawn, my kind of guy. all right, what about your favorite TV series then?
Seinfeld, hands down. Not even
close.
Oh,
I like you even more.
Not even close.
Perfect. All right, well, I never caught like a ton of Seinfeld, but I guess between the two of you guys, maybe you can slip in some Seinfeld jokes that I don't get.
Oh, I take that as a challenge. I can definitely handle that.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. What about, let's move to baseball. Who is your most hated baseball player?
BJ Upton.
Why is that?
Because I'm a Rays fan, and watching him swing at pitches that were not anywhere hittable and supposed to be like the next big leadoff hitter for them, and hitting about 230 every season. When you watch all the games down here, I just got tired of watching him do nothing. So I have to say BJ Upton, hands down.
And of course, you know, his
Melvin. I guess it's Melvin.
Yeah, Melvin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do you know what the BJ stood for?
Boss Man Jr.
Yes, and that is amazing, and I wish he still went by that for that reason.
I agree.
Boss Man Jr.
That is pretty great. I'm also worried about Byron Buxton turning into BJ Upton 2.0, just, you know, for those reasons, like number one prospect for years and years. Anyway, I still love him for now. But what about your favorite player then on the other side?
I would have to say favorite. Can it be a current guy or just all-time guy?
Whoever, man.
I'm a big Griffey fan. I've been a big Griffey fan for a long time.
Senior?
No, junior. Yeah, because I remember watching one of my best Griffey memories is the Simpsons episode where they had the celebrity softball game, and for whatever reason, Ken Griffey's skull swells, and he has to go to the hospital. And so I remember that as a kid. He was on the Simpsons. So, but yeah, I'm a big Griffey fan. I got a lot of his stuff and some baseball cards and things. So I'd say all time probably Griffey. I'd say right now if I had to pick a guy, I don't know. I'd probably say Longoria just because I'm a Rays fan.
Homer City. All right, final question then for you, Ron, before we dive into the show. What would you do for a Klondike bar?
Let's see. I would possibly I don't know.
Would you put on your shoes and run real far? Or perhaps put some gas in and drive your car?
I would I would dress like the Aladdin character Jafar.
Whoa, there you go.
That's menacing, yeah.
Thank you.
I have a real quick question. This is mine for you, and it's really deep.
Okay.
If the ocean were made of Jell-O, would boats still float?
No.
Hmm.
They'd give us all seasickness, I think, is what they would do. Be bouncing.
Well, my argument is that it depends on the boat. If it's a raft, if it's a flat bottom float boat, I think it would float. But if it's a pointy bottom, all right, I'm just going to stop talking. No one wants to hear this.
Definitely an unexpected tangent. Early on.
Welcome to Manly Van Lee's mind.
It is a scary, scary place. Kind of reminds me of that movie Dune, I think that's what it was called. Is that the one with Jennifer Lopez?
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. Anyway, what would you do for a Klondike bar? Tweet us at NastyCastBGFS on Twitter. Van is at Manly Van Lee, and Ron is at The Real Maday, M-A-D-A-Y. Please, if you're listening to us, take a moment to rate and review the podcast. Give us 5 stars if you like the show. And you can also get yourself some free Dutz pretzels that way. It is the most delicious snack in all of the world, especially when you're drinking beer like I am. The official snack of the NastyCast. Yes. And so we did this last week, guys, as we get into the actual baseball stuff. And I didn't promise a topic every week, and I still don't. But we do have 2 weeks in a row. I thought of an interesting topic just to sort of banter about with the opening pitch here. And so I am going to ask you guys, with almost a third of the season in the books right now, is it now or later, or were you at some point previously already taking action based on your standings in whatever league that you're in? Are you already, you know, making trades and doing ad drops and so on and so forth, adjusting to the league standings where you're at so far?
I'll start off. Ideally, you're doing this nonstop because I think the best way to win a league is to stay on top of the league and continue making moves. However, as far as a philosophical change, I think now absolutely is the time. It's usually the end of May when I start getting into it and reevaluating my teams. If you're in dead last and you look at the standings and you're, you know, so far out of a lot of these categories, then you need to make a decision here. If it's a keeper league in particular, move some pieces to get some better keepers. If it's a redraft league, there's not a whole lot you can do other than try and just get up there. So maybe start cutting players you don't need and so forth. But I think this is the opportune time. This is when you really kind of make that evaluation and start making the moves.
It's funny you said this because this is actually something I started doing this week in a couple of my leagues. And it's more that I'm looking at guys that I was big on in the offseason that are starting to kind of, you know, you want to keep them around for a little while, hoping that they come around. But, you know, guys like Tanner Rourke, guy that I liked a lot in the preseason, Yengervis Solarte, these guys are starting to kind of take a nosedive, and it gets to a point where you know, we talked last week about the DL spots and about if you have a limited bench, you really need to kind of maybe move on and see what's out there, see if you can trade or see if you can get some stuff off a waiver. So I actually started doing this in a lot of my leagues. Luckily, a couple of them I'm towards the top, so I don't really feel like I need to do a whole lot. But this past week I took over a team in a league where a guy bowed out, and I got a lot of work to do. So that kind of prompted me to, you know, see what else is out there in some of the leagues that I'm not up towards the top. But yeah, I actually started doing this right now. I agree with Van. Yeah, but it is something that you always need to be looking at those angles, those deals you can possibly make, you know, no matter where you're at in the standings, what you can always do to improve your team and what you can always do to stay on top of it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people take sort of the Memorial Day weekend approach, is like really dive into the standings there and see, you know, how you're sitting overall. But yeah, I'm with you guys. It's too late at that point. Like now this past week, I've really started making a lot of trades. Well, actually, it was 2 weeks ago I started making trades in the BGFS Dynasty Classic. I traded like 13 closers, you know, for some offensive help, and already I've moved up from dead last, which I was at for the entirety of the month of April, but I'm up in like I think around 7th, 8th, 10th place now, something like that.
Yeah, I think we essentially flip flopped in the last month, because I think I'm down around the bottom, so I need to kind of make a decision as to what I'm going to do in that league.
Yeah, see there, I think this plays into it too, because you want to take into account not only where you've been so far, but where you're going to go. You need to assess honestly, like, do I just have a bunch of slow starters that are going to rebound, or do I have to really cut some of these guys that I don't think are coming back? You know, even if I have to bite the bullet and sell low, and I'm just pretty much talking redraft leagues here, but like in that specific team, I like my offense. I just had a whole ton of slow starters, but then I had guys like, you know, Greg Bird that just really crapped the bed, and I ended up trading him to Bob. but my pitching has been, I think, overperforming. It's not particularly looking good in that one. All my other leagues, I'm doing fairly well. But yeah, I just thought that it was important to get your guys' opinions as far as where we're going there.
Well, and one thing I'll point out too is, and you have to look at it more specifically, not so much just am I in it or am I not, but this is the point in the season where I look at my team. For example, I've got a Fantrax Dynasty team that I'm number one in offense. I've got overall, but I'm middle of the pack in steals, and I'm number one in home runs by a huge margin. Okay, well, that means I need to move some homers for some speed. So you need to kind of take a look at your team and see where you have a bit of a lead or an advantage and fill in some holes. If you drafted a bunch of closers in the your draft, or you have a bunch of closers on your team and you've got a huge lead in saves, now's the time to move them. Conversely, if you don't have any saves because you didn't draft any closers, take a look and see, oh, I've got a bunch of homers. All right, I'll move a slugger for, you know, an Aroldis Chapman, or a closer that you know is going to get a decent amount of saves, something like that.
I would definitely be barking up the saves tree if you need them. Like that, the one thing that I've definitely noticed between all the leagues that I'm in, whether it's redraft or dynasty, the value of closers varies wildly from one league to another. Like people in the dynasty just treat closers like they're worthless, and then in another league's value them, you know, very highly. And it depends too, as far as like if they're sort of clustered or not. You know, if somebody's sort of, if there's 2, 3, 4 guys that are sort of running away and you're in like the tier below that, well, do I really want to trade for like 4 closers to try to catch that up, or do I just say screw it, you know? Mm-hmm. But I would say in steals too, since a lot of the players, you know, that accumulate the bulk of the stolen bases, I guess, I'm trying to get this out, like Billy Hamilton, like Jonathan Villar, I think those guys, you know, they can make a huge impact in the stolen base category. And a guy like VR, I think you can get pretty cheap because he's been so crappy, but he's, you know, he's still stealing base. I think he's got 12 steals already, even though he's hitting like 200. And I really do think that he's going to bounce back. I don't know why his play discipline backslid so much so far, but I think that's an approach.
Very good.
Oh, come on.
Who all year was saying Villar's being overdrafted. He's being overdrafted. He's still giving you steals. He's still hit for a little bit of power, but he is bad. He's not as good as a second round pick like everyone was taking him as.
Well, this is what I don't understand, is like the last couple of years, he's gotten better and better at not chasing pitches outside the zone. He's very patient and he's taking a ton of walks. And this year he just decided to throw his entire approach out the window, and he's just hacking at everything. And I do not understand why. And that's why I think that he can turn it around. I just don't know why he changed his approach, and I feel like he can just fall back into it, you know? And
yeah, he can certainly get better than this, definitely.
Yeah, so if you can get him super cheap, then, you know, I would do that. But I feel like that's a pretty good way to move yourself up in the standings, you know, especially if you're short in saves and steals. So
But, well, I mean, and for VR, I mean, his average, yeah, his average is in the tank, but I mean, he's still, with the 12 steals, he's still getting you 5 homers and 24 RBIs for middle infield guys. So that's not all bad either.
Yeah, he's getting value.
Is it second round value? No, but it's still, it's not bad.
Sure, sure. And somebody pointed this out to me, a good friend of mine said that, yeah, sure, he has 12 steals. But remember, if the triple slash was like it was last year, he'd have 22 steals like a Billy Hamilton. Yeah. So there's a lot of potential there as well. So I think Nathan really hit the nail on the head here. That's a guy I'm targeting. Even though I'm not high on Villar, if I can get him cheap enough, then I absolutely I'm going after that.
All righty, boys. Let's get into some news, shall we?
We shall.
The Red Sox of Boston have called up Sam Travis. And so far in the minor leagues this year, before he got called up, and actually this is Sam Travis Day, so we should all pop a bottle of bubbly, I guess. I forgot. It's a celebration. 139 plate appearances, 4 home runs in the minor leagues. He's 2-for-3 in steals, 9% walk rate, 17% strikeout rate, and slashing .286, .353, .452. So, Van, we'll start with you. What do you think about Sam Travis moving forward? What kind of leagues are you picking him up in?
Well, Travis, to me, well, first off, he sounds like a country music singer. And I ask you, what do you think his hit song would be? Well, I'll go ahead and tell you. It's "I Got Blood on My Socks, But a Trophy in My Case" by Sam Travis. So, you know, as a prospect, I'm not that interested in him. He has okay power, but it's not exceptional. He's a first baseman, and so he really can't play anywhere else on the diamond. He's going to hit for average, and maybe if he grows into that home run potential, he could have a lot more value. Not much speed, so I don't know. In long term, I'm still not that fascinated with him. In short term, I have zero interest because Farrell came out and said the other day that he's only going to start against left-handed pitching. So he's going to be the short side of the platoon because Mitch Moreland is actually playing well. And I just don't think you're going to get much value here. So if you're in a mixed league, 10-team, 12-team, I'm not even going to pay attention to him because it's just not going to happen. And if Hanley Ramirez does get a little more healthy and starts playing first base, then his job's virtually gone. He's only 23, though, so there's some potential. He was the 98th overall prospect on, I think, Keith Law's list. And guys in that range, sure, they're a prospect, but if they're there, I want them to be a 19-year-old prospect, someone who has the ability to go up. If he's rated that lowly at age 23, I just don't think the ceiling's really going to be that interesting.
So Van hates him, Ron. What do you think?
I don't know if I hate him, but I agree with a lot of what Van said. I mean, he's going to be just a platoon guy for right now. At that point, with the low price he's probably going to have, he might be a nice option in DFS. He's actually 2-for-4 tonight, so that's a pretty decent start. And he'll be cheap, you know, like I said, in DFS. But it remains to be seen what he's going to be doing as far as if he's going to be able to hit righties. I think I looked up in AAA, his slash is decent, but he's only hitting .247 against righties. So you'd like to see that change a little bit. But it'd have to be a deep league where I'd be able to stash him on days that he's not starting, because I think he is a nice start when he's in there against lefties. But you know, you have to be able to have the room to have him. And you know, like we talked about last week with the DL spots, that might be kind of a difficult thing to do. So overall, he's not a guy that I'm actively seeking out really in any format right now.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have much to add. I would say pretty much AL only leagues is, you know, short side platoon first baseman doesn't really get my blood pumping, as they say. So let's move on to some sad news. And there's Freddie Freeman out 8 to 10 weeks. And we're going to dive into some direct replacements at the first base / corner infield when we play legit or quit a little bit later on. But while we're talking about Freeman's, boys, what's your favorite Morgan Freeman movie?
Oh boy, Schindler's List. No, the other one, Shawshank Redemption. I'd like to say Sam the Dufresne. Yeah, that sort of thing.
Ron,
it's got to be, well, Schindler's List, but Glory's got to be close second. So
Glory
was a good movie. Yeah.
Oh boy, I don't think I've ever even seen that one. What's it? What is it?
It's a Civil War movie. I believe he won an Oscar for it, if I remember right.
Sounds about right. Yeah, he was a very, very, very good movie. Definitely worth a watch. Yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen it, but it is pretty, pretty solid. Hey, by the way, I wanted to throw the B-side of Sam Travis's country single. I think the B side of that could be there's a green monster in my bed.
I think we're onto something. We need.
Yeah,
to,
I think we
this
are.
This is
too.
Also.
Really, yeah.
It's going to be the soundtrack to the Scout Pig movie. It's going to be all composed by him.
That pig didn't think I could hit righties. For what it's worth, I think Seven deserves an honorable mention as far as Morgan Freeman movies.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about Seven. That's one of my yes. favorite movies of all time.
Yes. Very good.
Thank you. Okay. moving on to other news. Speaking of first baseman, Matt Adams traded to the Braves. He didn't know what was in the box when he got traded there. Is his value up, down, or the same, Ron?
Well, and like we'll see with the legit or quick guys that we're going to talk about at first base, I think one of the best things about Matt Adams is his job security until Freddie Freeman comes back, because there's not really much else on that roster that's going to be at first base. They signed James Loney last week, and he's already been released because of the Matt Adams trade. So he's still... he started out pretty hot for Atlanta, but he's still only hitting 200 against lefties. He's not, you know, that's always kind of been the down as far as when you look at Matt Adams. But, I mean, you know, in a deeper league, if you need some help there, he's going to get the at-bats because, like I said, just by default because there's nobody else there. So I think it makes him a little more valuable, obviously, that he's there and he's actually going to see the field every day, at least for a little while.
What do you say, Van? Value up, down, or the same?
I do. I'm pretty similar, but value's up. I think it was either last week or the week prior I kind of mentioned that I had no interest in him, but now I do because he's going to have a job and he's going to play pretty much every day, and he's also going to be in a position that he can handle because I think there's a little bit of a mental thing out there if he's in left field and he botches every play that, yeah, he's probably going to struggle offensively as well because he's in a bad mood because of the poor defensive play. Now, one thing I did want to mention about Freddie Freeman that was kind of good news, because I know a lot of people out there, anytime a wrist injury happens, you think the power is going to be sapped and everything. Well, according to a report, he broke the, quote, best possible wrist bone. It's a non-displaced fracture, so basically no surgery. So I really think when Freeman comes back, he's just going to jump right in and be fine.
He will be a free man.
Free man. Morgan Freeman.
Definitely value up from Matt Adams. I mean, just because of the playing time. I think that 15-team mixed leagues could make use of him, especially, you know, we've found out that there seems to be a bit of a power alley or a short porch in right field, you know, that's really beneficial for left-handed hitters at that new Atlanta stadium, SunTrust Stadium. And so I think that'll play well for him. So I think in leagues where you're rostering the likes of like a Travis Shaw, you know, that kind of, you know, platoon, you know, at least he's not like like Sam Travis, you know, where he's got the short side of the platoon. He's going to be hitting against righty. So I would be giving him an ad in about 15-team mixed leagues. So let's go to some sadder news, and that is Blake Snell, who was demoted in the Tampa Bay rotation. So let's kind of take a look at the situation over there. Who do we like as far as replacement candidates in Tampa Bay? You know, is there somebody on the farm down there that we're expecting to see a call-up from? Do we like an in-house replacement, Van? What do you think?
Well, they've got a couple of guys. I think they've already said that the eraser, Erasmo Ramirez, is going to come in and pitch, and they may not need a fifth starter for a little while. So I think he's going to be the guy right now. But on the farm, they've got Brent Honeywell, who's really, really good, but maybe he's a little young. Chiwei Hu, he throws in the low 90s with a potential 98-mile-an-hour fastball. He's got some stuff. And Taylor Guerrero was having a pretty good season before he got hurt. And if he comes back, there's supposedly good news on him and pitches well. I think he's pretty much ready to come up to the show. So they've got plenty of pieces. Whether or not the Rays do it, who knows? Because I'm not that confident in Ramirez as far as holding down a job.
Yeah, well, you're down there in Florida, Ron. What do you think of the situation?
Well, Snell's another guy that I liked in the offseason, and then one of the things I said when we talked about him on the preview when John and Nate and I did that was he can't get in as many jams as he did last year, and that's exactly what he did this season. He allowed too many base runners. His whip was insanely high, and so he needs to go down for a little bit. Van mentioned a couple of the guys. I'll tell you a little bit more about Brent Honeywell later on. And if you look at highlights of him, look at his stuff, he's pretty serious as far as the stuff that he has. Taylor Guerrero is another guy. Another guy that they have in the bullpen, too, that I don't know what exactly the plans are with him, that was a pretty early pick and was a pretty decent college arm that kind of tailed off the end of his college career, was Ryan Stanek is a guy that's up there. Erasmo Ramirez has actually looked pretty serviceable, though, his last couple of starts. He actually pitched decent tonight. I think he went 6-9 and allowed 2 earned runs. So he's given them a nice replacement for right now. I don't know. I can't believe if Van Mitch and Jose De Leon that they got in the Logan Forsythe deal, he threw last night and failed to look impressive at all. He only went 4 innings, allowed 8 hits. So I don't know if he's going to be ready yet. I know when he got his taste of the majors last year with the Dodgers, he was, I think his ERA was like over 6. So Brent Honeywell is the guy, though. I mean, I think he's the one that's pretty close to being ready. But that when you look at that AAA staff, they have quite a few options. But like I said, Stanek's up there. But, you know, you wonder how long of a leash they're going to give Erasmo Ramirez. And it's kind of one of those things, if he's still able to get outs and able to not blow leads and get, you know, keep him in the game, they might want to keep those guys down a little bit longer. But I think Honeywell is the guy that's best suited for the show right now.
Yeah, they definitely take their time promoting their prospects, that is for sure, down there in Tampa. Well, and just, you know, appropriately so, because they don't have the financial wherewithal to not pay attention to that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think you're right with Ramirez. He's probably the guy to look at in deep leagues right now. Unfortunately, his ship has sort of sailed for me. Like, I'm so sick of waiting on Erasmo Ramirez to be good. But one guy that you haven't touched on is Jacob Faria. I think that he might be close to a call-up, perhaps in the second half of the season. He strikes out a ton of dudes, but he also walks the farm. So my expectations are a bit tempered for him. I think Brent Honeywell is the best of these, but I really don't know that we're going to see him this year. And again, we'll touch on him a little bit more later. So yeah, for it's Erasmo for me in a deep league. And then there was this bit of news as well, which affects dynasty leaguers. Luis Robert signs with the White Sox, not Louis Robert, because he's not a Frenchman. Oh, I don't know why people were pronouncing his name like that, but it's going to be like what you signed with the White Sox with penalties and stuff. It's going to end up being costing them about $50 million, I believe. 6'2", 175, right-hander. Do you guys have any impressions on him? Are you targeting him heavily in dynasty leagues?
Maybe not heavily, but I think he's definitely someone to look at. I think we've kind of been burned by the Rusney Castillo or Hector Oliveras of the world, so maybe expectations are tempered a bit. But I think he's a good pickup for the White Sox and a team who's doing a lot of things right as far as rebuilding. Ultimately, he doesn't run a whole lot because he doesn't have a ton of speed, and I don't think it'll translate to the major leagues. But I'm a little critical of his ability to walk against major league pitchers, but he's toolsy, and he should have plenty of power and good defense. So I think it's a good pickup for them, and I'm really surprised the Cardinals didn't go after him because they really need an impact minor league player, and the money wasn't that much. It was a lot, but in baseball world, it really wasn't.
Yeah, Ron, do you play in a lot of dynasty leagues? I know that you're in the BGFS dynasty league, quote unquote, but it's more, you know, we only keep 10 guys and there's only 5-man farm, so it's more of a keeper league. But do you play in other dynasties?
Yeah, I actually have I have one I've alluded to a little bit earlier in some of these podcasts, where we have 19 teams. It's a roto, but we each have a 15-man minor league roster as well. So when it's deep like that, a lot of these guys that will come in from other countries are already gone, and I play in another one that's a 40-man roster, and you keep everybody. So it's, you know, you can have you could have your starting lineup and then the rest of it be prospects if you wanted to. So in a couple of mine, he's already been gone for since before the season started. If he's out there, I mean, because you know, when you play in deep dynasties like that, it's hard to find guys in the middle of the season that people aren't already on, especially when you have a big minor league roster like that. And if he's still out there, I think he's a guy definitely you'd have to add if you got the space. It's interesting to look at what the White Sox are adding at the minor league level. When you look at all the riches of pitching they have with Giolito and Kopish and Ronaldo Lopez and Tyler Danish and Carson Fulmer. And I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And then offensively, you've got Yoan Moncada. So I was reading up a little bit about him today, and I actually did see in a couple places that his name is actually pronounced Robert, which I thought was interesting.
See, now I heard definitively Robert.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So, see, we need to get to the bottom of this.
Oh, my God.
But not Robert? That's more of a Nate Duncan. Well, Robert. Hey, we got Louis Robert here. He's a real sweet fellow.
Okay, well, so Van, as an Angels fan, Luis Valbuena, right? Not Louis Valbuena. Buena?
It is Luis, but I mean, okay. That's not necessarily. I mean, it depends on the person and their parents. I mean, who cares about names, first and foremost? That's one of the few things in your own life you have zero control over, for the most part.
True. I mean, your parents named you after a motor vehicle, so.
They did. They did, very much so.
Yeah. Robert Robert, however you say it, 711 plate appearances in the Serie Nationale, hit .314. Premium bat speed, above average defense is what I've heard on him. So it should be an above average regular. You know, if you're in the dynasty leagues, a lot of the rules vary wildly. So make sure, especially if you take over a team, that you figure out the rules and regulations there. Because, for example, the prestigious dynasty baseball league, the way that we do it is once July 2nd hits and you have that big flood of J2 signings, that's it. It doesn't matter if somebody signs Jose Abreu, you know, that type of player, and he goes right to the White Sox. Like, it doesn't matter. You can't pick him up. He goes into the draft pool for the next year. But between the draft that we hold in the offseason and that July 2nd date, like, if you sign like Robert has, then he gets, whenever he gets put into the CBS player database, which God knows where it is, or when that'll be, like, that's when you have to use your fab on him. And I kind of like that, especially on CBS, because their player pool isn't the best. So you're like, every day you're getting in there, like, is he in there yet? Nope. Is he in there yet? Nope. So you really have to work for it. So I really like that. So not only do you have to hoard all your fab to get this guy if you're a rebuilding team, like, you actually have to put in the effort for it. But yeah, but then I play in a different league, you know, where it doesn't matter what point throughout the season they sign. They just go into the pool for next year to be drafted.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just important to keep up on all your rules. And he definitely does see. I'm definitely not that excited. Like you said, Van, like, I've kind of got the Cuban prospect fatigue as far as getting burned by the Rusnys and all that kind of stuff. So my expectations are a bit tempered, but we shall see how he does with the White Sox. Moving on to Anthony Alford, who we actually talked about a couple weeks ago in the prospect segment. He was called up, even though he might not be up for too long, but before his call-up, he was really having a breakout season. 141 plate appearances in the minors, 3 bombs. He was 9 for 10 in steals, slashing .325, .411, .455, 11% walk rate, 17% Ks. I don't know. I don't think that, as far as assessing his value this year, I don't know that it's very huge. Like, I was actually shocked. I don't know about you guys, but when he got called up, I was shocked. And it seemed to have just been, you know, when Pilar was suspended for 2 games, but he's still up. So have you guys heard, is he just sticking around for depth?
Well, I mean, he's hurt now, so.
Yeah, unfortunately, he went on the deal today. So.
Are you serious?
Yeah, he broke his Hammett bone. Yeah, and fun fact.
No, his Hammett.
I've had surgery, and I no longer have Hammett bones because I've had both of mine out. Yeah, so here's the suckiest part about that.
That's terrible.
Because he was on the Major League roster when he hurt it, he goes on the Major League DL, which means he's accruing service time without giving any value to the Blue Jays. So as far as the team perspective, he's going to get that, you know, Super 2 status or whatever he's at. I don't know if it's that. And because he got hurt. So, yeah, I'm not that interested in because of that. And I just, I don't know, I don't think he's going to do a whole lot for you this year. But I think he's a long-term piece you could look at for sure.
Ugh. God, that really ruins my day. I had no idea that he broke his hamate. Oh, my God. That's terrible for power, too. And he, a lot of people didn't realize, like, you know, I was thinking about cashing in my prospects a little bit in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League, and Alford is pretty much my premier guy.
I was going to say, you even have prospects in that league?
I do, yeah. I've been basically restocking for the last 2 years because I sold off every piece. And, you know, before that, it was just Chris Bryant was, like, my one guy, but... Yeah, so I had Alford, but his draft stock or his prospect stock in dynasty leagues hadn't really caught up to what he was doing this year because he was a two-way player, for, you know, late into his life. So he's only really been full on into baseball for a couple years, and he was really coming into his own, breaking out, and that's now he's broken his hamate bone. So that sucks. Mm-hmm. That really takes the wind out of my sails. I need to drink some more beer. Let's let's take a break here, and then we'll come back with some legit or quit. I'm going to cry. All right, I have sufficiently dried my tears, and we're going to play some legit or quit as I try to move on from Anthony Alford. It's horrible news. Let's try to find some Freddie Freeman replacements, folks, and maybe we can sort of wrap this in a bow when we're done with all these guys and figure out who we like the best. So, Van, I guess we'll start with you. Justin Smoke is our first guy here. He has been on fire, 10 home runs, slashing .278, .340, .542. What do you think? Is this legit with the Justin Smoke?
Boy, just love those 30-year-olds who have a good month and a half because I'm all in on them. No, not at all. I don't think this is real. I gave up on Justin Smoke a long time ago. He's a career .226, .310, .400 hitter. He's always shown a little bit of power, but I think this is just absurd. He's succeeding now, but I guarantee he's going to fall back to earth. So I'm out on him. I think if you own him, hang on to him, reap the rewards, but don't expect this to continue too much longer.
Yeah, same for me. I mean, I think the power is somewhat legit because more than likely you did not draft Justin Smoke. You got him off waivers, and so the investment wasn't that big. So kind of like Van said, just kind of enjoy what you're getting out of him. But, you know, he alluded to his .226 average. He is hitting .278 this year so far, so that's a pretty big jump as far as what he has done in his career. But he's another guy like we talked about with Matt Adams. He's the guy that's playing every day at that spot. So in deeper leagues, you know, especially like I said, you know, the 19 teamer that I play in or 15 teams, something like that, you're looking for guys that play every day. And so he's a guy that's playing every day that you probably, like I said, plucked off waivers and you're getting a little more than what you thought, but there's no way that the .278 stays legit. I could see him maybe setting a career high for homers, maybe hitting a few more than he's been accustomed to, but I wouldn't say he's going to be past 23 to 25 on the high side. I think he is going to come down to earth at some point.
Well, I will say I'm the rosiest amongst us as far as the Smoke goes, and it for me it goes to his contact, which is up nearly 9% so far this year. Has really cut his swing strike rate down a ton, and so I don't know if he did some work with his swing or anything like that, but this doesn't just seem to be BABIP driven. In fact, you know, .288 BABIP this year, .295 BABIP last year, but he's hitting, you know, 60 points higher. And his hard contact is way up. 45% hard contact is ridiculous. And so I wonder if, you know, like, I don't think that, you know, he's going to quite keep up this pace, but I think he can get you a lot of homers. I think you're looking at a pretty easily a career year as far as the home run total. And, well, with the batting average that I don't think will kill you anymore, you know, because he's not swinging and missing like he used to. So I'm in the camp of he can continue this on at least to a certain extent. So I'm actually pretty interested in the Smoke. But perhaps we can get more intrigue in the next guy, which is the similarly named Justin Bour. Where there's smoke, there's Bour, they say. 12 home runs, .280, .363, .560 slash line. Ronatello, we're going to start with you on this one. Justin Bour, what do you think?
I think legit. I've liked Justin Bour the last couple of years. He's a guy that I target in deep leagues, especially for my corner infield spots. Hitting two, like you said, hitting .280 so far this year, and the big thing has been him hitting lefties in his career. He's only hit him .243, but this year he's hitting him .303, and the sample size is pretty big. So I like Justin Bour. I think he's a younger guy. He's a guy that's gotten a little bit of experience, and I don't know. Like I said, you know, if the .280 is going to keep up, but if you can get, you know, .260 out of Justin Bour, hit 25 bombs. It's just like all these guys. You have to kind of keep it in perspective with what you're getting as opposed to what you invested and what your expectations are. So I think he's a guy that can definitely help you out, but I think he's definitely legit. And he's a guy that I've been on for a couple of years.
I completely agree with you, Ron. He's been getting better every year for the last couple of years. He's taken a big step forward this year. And like you said, it's mostly against hitting left-handers. Now, I don't think the .303 mark against same-handed pitching is going to stay, but if it's .270 to .300, I mean, I'll take that in a heartbeat because he's going to be better against righties. So the average could be fine. So the power's maybe a little more so than he can handle. I don't think it stays at this pace, but he's still a power hitter. So I think he can help in that regard completely.
Yeah, I have long thought that Justin Bour was underrated, and I ended up with him in a couple leagues this year. Very excited about these. Like you guys touched on with the lefties, that's always what's, you know, capped his value, because he just could never hit lefties. And so, you know, before the season started, actually, they were talking about you know, playing him full time, even letting him face lefties. I'm like, that's not good. You know, that's going to drag down his value because he sucks against lefties. Why would you not find somebody else to play with him? And there is talk of them moving out. Oh God, who's their catcher from behind the plate? Oh Jesus,
Real Muto.
Yes, Real Muto. Yeah, they're gonna play him at first base, you know, against lefties. And I was like, oh, that was a great idea. But now he's actually hitting lefties. Bor is, and you know, like you said, the 300 average, you know, it's probably not going to stick. But if you're looking at the quality of contact, it is really good. A 45% hard contact rate against lefties. And that is very encouraging for me. He's hit three home runs off him already. So no longer am I worried. And I think his value is going through the roof. He needs to be owned in all leagues as far as I'm concerned, especially with Freddie Freeman being out. So Josh Bell is our third first base slash corner infield type. He was always thought of as a sort of a lack of power first baseman, yet he has 9 home runs so far this year, and he's slashing .254, .346, .507. Van, what do you think? Is this legitimate from Josh Bell?
I think some parts of it are legitimate. He's never been projected to have a ton of power, so I don't think the power is going to be what it is. In fact, his home run fly ball rate's at 25%, and I mean, that's double his career rate, so I don't think that stays. I think he's basically hit for an okay average, which I believe in, and he's always been able to walk, so I believe in his OBP. So it's kind of hard to say legit or quit. I'm going to quit this version of Josh Bell, but I still think there are some redeeming values here.
Yeah, I think long-term legit. I think Josh Bell is going to be fine, but no, the power I don't think is going to be there. I was looking at his numbers, and the 262 BABIP that he has only ranks him about 143rd in the league. So I think he needs to up that a little bit, do a little bit more when he puts the ball in play. The thing I worry about with him, especially this year, is the Pirates lineup with the guys that they're missing. I don't know if he's going to get a lot of opportunities to do much. And so in that regard, I think you may be kind of disappointed with what you get from him this year, but I think beyond that, I think he can be a pretty solid first baseman, pretty serviceable guy in a lot of lineups beyond this year when they get everybody back from suspension and injury and legal strange work visa related legal troubles and things like that. So I do like him beyond this year though.
Yeah, I'm not huge into the Josh Bell. I never was, just because of his lack of power when he was coming up. And you know, if you look at the 9 homers, you know, how did he get there? Well, the first thing that jumps out is a 26% home run per fly ball. And that's with a actually below league average hard contact rate of 28%. And he's hitting 54% ground balls, just 30% balls in the air. You do not deserve that home run per fly ball rate, sir. And I think that's going to come crashing way down. I don't know how he managed to hit 9 home runs already. But as far as on base, yeah, if you're an on base league, definitely I would still be hanging on to him. But aside from that, I think he's just a deep league guy. Like you said, the lineup isn't great this year, and I think between these, you know, this trio that we've talked about so far, I'm definitely the least optimistic on the Josh Bell. But then enter in our fourth guy, Adrian Gonzalez, who has 0 home runs this year, spent some time on the disabled list, and Andrew Tolles being out for the year. Shifting Bellinger to the outfield, that kind of hurried along his recovery timeline. So while he was in there, he hit .252, .314, and then .315. Quite the slash line there. So, Ron, what do you think about Adrian Gonzalez moving forward? Is he going to be worth anything?
No, and he's a guy that I was quitting last year, and then, you know, into this year, definitely a guy that I was not targeting anywhere. You can see, and you kind of alluded to it a little bit with Josh Bell, Nate, as far as first base, you look to get power out of first base if you can. And he's definitely regressed in that category last couple of years. I don't know if you're going to get much out of him beyond my expectations for him would be maybe 15 homers, 75 RBIs this year. So if you're in a deeper league, I mean, you could do a little bit worse, but I just think the fact that Cody Bellinger, you know, the glove that he has at first base And him showing with the bat that he belongs up at the major league level, it kind of makes me wonder if they might look to, if there's a team that might need a bat around the deadline, they might deal him and maybe get something in return that they can use, you know, to try to make a postseason run, especially, like I said, with Cody Bellinger showing that he can handle major league pitching. But he's a guy that I definitely am not on, definitely don't really want anywhere.
Completely agree. Yeah, I've been out on Gonzalez for a while, just like you, and we're seeing the real career slide here. So he's not really going to provide much value going forward, particularly because he didn't really provide that much value in the past, even when he was really good. Well, I won't say really good, but in the past couple of years when he was decent, he didn't provide that much value. So I think it's only going to get worse from here.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that. So I will ask you, Van, then, which one of these four guys are you is your preference as far as replacing Freeman?
Boer, hands down. I think he's the best of the bunch, and I think he has the most potential to help you going forward, not only this year, but career-wise. I think Bell would be the second in that regard, but maybe, yeah, I'd still go Bell second overall, but definitely it's Justin Boer for me.
I'd say Boer also, and I think of the four guys we talked about, I think Boer has the best chance of being a guy that's not that can get out of that status of being a replacement guy. He could be, yeah, I think he has potential to maybe next year, year after, be a guy that you might actually target as your starting first baseman, depending on how your draft goes. I don't think the other three are going to be in that category.
Oh, we're all in agreement. What a bore. Sorry, I apologize. Let's move on to some pitchers then, shall we? Alex Wood, he has 43 innings pitched so far this year. He is 5-0 with a 1.88 ERA. And if we break down his splits even farther, his last three starts, 18 and a third innings, scoreless with 25 strikeouts and four walks. So who are we starting off with here? I always lose track. Whoever wants to go first.
Oh, you, Ron.
I think legit, definitely. And when you look at what he's doing, you know, he's been a guy that, you know, when he was with the Braves, I was really on because I think he kind of showed it towards the end of one of those seasons a few years ago. And then all of a sudden he becomes a starter, not the same as he was when he was coming out of the bullpen. And so I think when you look at the sample size you got from him, he's thrown 43 innings and you alluded to his ERA. He's got a 1.02 whip. The thing that I thought was interesting about him is of pitchers that have 40 innings pitched, his FIP of 189 is second in the league. It's behind Chris Sale. And so I thought that was pretty interesting when you look at that regard. But I think he's legit just because he's done it for this many starts, this many innings. And then you add to that, too, one thing I wanted to throw in there, too. He's got 52 strikeouts in 43 innings. So as of right now, he's a guy that if he's out there, I think he's definitely worth picking up because I think of what you look at on waivers. And when I compare him with, you know, the other guys we're going to look at here as far as pitchers in legit or quit, he's by far the most legit of anybody that we're going to discuss or anybody that might be out there on the waiver wire still, if he is available.
Yeah, he's definitely legit. He's only 26. And remember, he's shown flashes of brilliance before. K rate's up a bit, but he is limiting base runners. I think my big caveat here would be that I don't think he throws a lot of innings. But if you do temper your expectations, I think you're going to get a legit benefiter, that's not even a word, to your lineup and your team. Listen, I'm not in the best mindset here. I burned my fingers really badly, so I'm kind of loopy. But anyway.
You're covered in mustard.
I'm covered in mustard. I'm hot doggery-ish, and I like Alex Wood. That's most people say that about me, first and foremost, anytime.
Number one, that guy smells like a hot dog. Yeah, he's definitely legit. Which I'm thankful for because I managed to pick him up in a few leagues this year, and he's been one of the few bright spots on a couple of my rosters. Yeah, the velocity's up a little bit, but, you know, he came out of the bullpen to start the year, so that's a little bit deceptive. But, yeah, using the crap out of that changeup, and his curveball is getting plenty of whiffs, 21% whiffs on the curveball, and career high for him overall, 12% swing strike rate. The ground ball rate, too, is just elite, 68% ground ball rate. And I love that. So he's getting whiffs and grounders. The 188, like you said, with the 189 FIP, I mean, this, unless he just runs into his innings limit or he tires out or he gets injured, as he has done often in the past, I think this is totally legit. So just ride it out as long as you can. Junior Guerra, wanted to get your guys' opinion on him. He was coming off the DL. He missed most of the season. He left his first start. So, Vanny, what are you expecting from Junior Guerra? Can he be an impact pitcher coming back off the disabled list?
I don't know if impact is the right word. I think he could possibly help a team as the back end of your staff, but he's 32 and he doesn't strike out many guys, and he's had calf injuries this year. So I'd be curious to see how that affects him. I think he's serviceable, but I really don't want to have to rely on him. If you're suddenly struck with a bunch of injuries, yeah, maybe he's a guy you can plug in there and get some innings when he, you know, comes back and shows he's healthy, but he's not a target of mine.
Well, when your cattle are getting hurt, that hurts your soul too. You got a bad calf. Yeah. You got to keep an eye on them. They'll run into fences and whatnot.
I'm not targeting him either. He's a guy last year that, you know, he enjoyed a pretty solid season, but still, I was a little skeptical about him. I don't like the fact that he pitches at Miller Park either. That doesn't help his chances. But you know, calf injuries, leg injuries, you know, they don't sound major, but for a guy that's pushing off and using his legs to generate a lot of power to throw pitches, I don't think that's a good a combination. I mean, I think at best serviceable in the back end of the rotation, but I'm going to try to look elsewhere if I can for guys beyond Junior Guerra.
Yeah, got a bit lucky last year. Both his FIP and ex-FIP were just about a full run over the 2.81 ERA that he posted. And like you guys said, with the middling K rate, not the most exciting guy, but I certainly do think he can be a back-end pitcher, especially those in like 14, 15, 16 mixed leagues. I think he's a guy that I'm definitely picking up whenever he comes back here. Ty Black with the Giants. 41 and two-thirds innings pitched so far. He's got a 2-2 record with a 4.10 ERA. Ron, what do you think of Ty Black?
I was wondering how to accurately, we're talking about Luis Robert earlier, so I was wondering how you pronounce this, and so I was pronouncing it Blatch, so I like to affectionately call him Ty Belch. not a fan yeah. At all. I don't think you can trust him. I know when you look at his numbers, he has a start where he got blown up for 8 runs. He earned runs as far as when you look at his game logs, he hasn't allowed a ton of them, but he also doesn't strike out a lot of guys. He doesn't walk a ton either, so that helps you out. But when I'm trying to find the guys on the wire, I'm trying to find some strikeouts. I'm trying to find more of that kind of stuff. And I'd much rather try to add a guy that can give me some Ks and maybe has a little bit higher ERA, you know. And it also depends on team need as well. But you got to think too. He's not striking out guys. He's not going to get you wins because the offense behind him is not that good. San Francisco's towards the bottom and runs scored. So I'm gonna leave Ty Belch for someone else.
Yeah, it's not pretty looking at his numbers. And this isn't a case of like a Tyler Chatwood who can possibly give you some decent innings and strike out maybe 6 or 7 per 9. This guy has a career, and it's a small sample size of, I don't know, 60 innings, but he has a career major league K per 9 of 3.68. That is awful, 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 awful. FIP and ex-FIP do not like him. He's at 4.4 and 5 respectively. So this is a guy I'm actively avoiding.
Totally concur. I was trying to look up for his name pronunciation while you guys were talking there. I couldn't find it, but we'll get to the bottom of this.
I'm just gonna stick with Belch.
It's Belcher. Yeah, I don't have much to add. I mean, yeah, a guy with the strikeout rate that low, I don't care if you're pitching a 2 ERA. Like, that's just a negative in strikeouts. So he's definitely a pass for me. How about Herman Marquez out in Colorado? He's got 35 innings pitched so far. He's 3-2 with a 3.86 ERA, Van.
German Marquez. Yeah, he's 22. And the Rockies, if you look at their body of work as far as pitchers this year and towards the end of last year, they've figured something out to do with their pitchers. And obviously that has a lot to do with the staff that they have. But they're having some guys that are succeeding. Jeff Hoffman has been good lately. John Gray was really good last year until he, of course, got hurt this year, too. I think Marquez has some potential to be a good back-end piece of your staff, particularly of the guys we've talked about. He's definitely a second to Alex Wood for me. So I kind of like him. Again, temper expectations because this guy pitches in Coors. But if you use him in the right manner, you could get some value.
I have a little bit of a soft spot for him this week because he helped me cash in DFS the other night. So I got to say legit for right now. The thing I wanted to look at with him was, you know, he's a dreaded Colorado pitcher that's going to pitch at Coors. So I looked at his game logs, and you look at the starts that he's made. He has a couple of starts where he got roughed up a little bit, but it was against the Nats and the Diamondbacks at Coors. So, I mean, those are teams that anybody has the potential. I mean, even Kershaw's and Syndergaard's of the world, they've got the potential to get blown up by those two teams as well. But when you look at him against the Cubs, he went 8 scoreless against the Cubs, only allowed 3 hits at home. So I think he's legit. He's been excellent on the road. So he might be a guy that, you know, if you're looking at him for DFS standpoint, or you're looking at him in a deeper league, I think in his 3 road starts, he's only allowed 2 runs total. So overall, I think he's a guy that you can start anywhere, but especially if you can catch him when he's starting on the road, he seems to be pretty effective there. So I definitely think he's legit. And then I think there's a lot to what Van said as well. They're figuring out finally. It seems like they haven't had, you know, pitching prospects or anybody come up that's been able to pitch at all for them, and they're finally starting to get it right. And I think he's a guy that has gotten it right so far.
Well, I'm going to quit him, and I'm going to give you a couple reasons why. Number one, he claims he's a German, yet he was born in Venezuela, so I don't like pitchers that are going to lie to me right off the bat. I don't care for that one bit. So number one, that's, you know, you got one strike with me already. But number two, you're pitching in Coors, and I don't even need a third strike. That's good enough for me to avoid him. You know, April, 7.20 ERA over 10 innings, so you're like, oh, this guy's garbage. But then in May, a 2.52 ERA over 25 innings. So he has certainly been better, and perhaps on the road he is a streamer, but overall just a middling K rate, and I'm just not that interested. But we are going to shift gears and go to the bullpen, boys, and this is going to be our weekly Washington segment. Is Coda Glover the man now, Ron? Tell me no, because I have Sean Kelly everywhere still.
Well, I hope this doesn't hit you as hard as the Anthony Alford news, but I as of right now, I don't think so.
Oh, God, why?
Last week. Damn you. I think it's something that they have to throw him out there to see what they have. I mean, I don't think that he's gotten enough of a shot yet, so I'm hoping they'll do that. But, you know, like we said last week too, I think that it's Coda's job. If he doesn't end up showing that he's the guy, I still believe that they go out and get somebody else, because they're looking at going on to big things this season, and I don't think that they would let something like the revolving door at closer be what holds them back. And I think there's a couple of candidates they could go out and get. We mentioned Dellin Betances kind of being showcased. We mentioned Kelvin Herrera, them looking at him. David Robertson's a guy that gets talked about a lot. So I think they give him a tryout, see what they got. If they have something great, they don't have to go out and get anybody else. Maybe they could add another piece, but I think if he fails, they're going to go out and get somebody from somewhere.
I'm not quite ready to retract my going outside of the organization claim, kind of like you're saying, Ron. But I read a report, and I think it was Dusty Baker that said this, but don't quote me on it. It may have been someone else high up in the Nationals organization that said that as long as he does the job, he'll have it. And I think that's a short-term boost that says, hey, he's going to have the job. But again, I still think they go outside of the organization. If we get 3 more weeks of this and he's elite, maybe then instead of going to get a closer, they go and get a mid-relief guy that can help them. I still think they're going to help in the bullpen, but we'll see how it goes. So I like him, and yeah, he's got the job now. So sorry, Nate.
This is a sad day. But yeah, you're definitely right. It's Coda Glover right now, and I don't have any more to say. It's just going to make me sadder. So let's move on. We're slowly approaching that point in the era where we're going to start seeing some bullpen pieces moved. And it's been a slow week, actually, for bullpen turnover for probably the first week all season, to be perfectly honest. So rather than addressing any individual bullpens, I thought we'd revisit our top 3 handcuffs for the time being. I guess, Van, we'll start with you this time. Who are your top 3 handcuffs at the moment?
Well, you know, I have a couple here for you. I don't necessarily know if these are in order or whatever, but they're guys that I like. Kyle Barraclough has been really good for A.J. Ramos in Florida. I don't necessarily think A.J. Ramos is going to lose the job, but if he gets a extended period of struggling, we've seen Miami do this where they just pull people for whatever reason. So I think he's the guy to watch there. And Ramos has struggled a bit his last 2 games. I still like him, but we'll see. Ryan Madsen is technically not the closer in Oakland. Santiago Casilla is listed as a closer, and that's a joke. Madsen is clearly the better pitcher, and there's no reason he shouldn't outright be the pitcher. He's been getting some vulture saves and so forth, but he should be the guy, and I think that happens sooner rather than later. And then the third one I'll touch on is Archie Bradley for Fernando Rodney. We're still getting Rodney just giving up runs in just handfuls. So I think eventually, because Bradley's been so good out of the pen, they go ahead and give him the job.
All right. I will be touching on that bullpen as well myself. But, Ron, who are your three handcuffs, your top three handcuffs?
It seems like when I was going through these, my guys are DL guys that are going to be back shortly. And the first one I went with was Nate Jones. You know, I kind of alluded to David Robertson, you know, maybe being dealt. He's a guy that trade rumors have been around since, you know, last offseason. So Nate Jones was solid when he's in there, 15 Ks, 11.2 innings. From what I'm reading, he's close to throwing again, so it doesn't seem like his return's going to be that far off. But he's a guy definitely, if you and all these guys too, if you add them anyway, if you have the room to add them, they're going to help out, you know, your categories, and you're going to get a little bit out of them anyway. And I play in a league that saves holds, so some of these guys I already have anyway, and they're already helping me in the holds category. Joakim Soria is another guy that, you know, we mentioned if Herrera gets dealt, he would step into that role. He's done it before at a high level. I think he's been an all-star for KC as a closer, so he's a guy that I've got on there. And then kind of a longer shot guy that I've watched pitch a couple times I've really been impressed with is Jose Leclerc for Texas. Matt Bush has been decent, but the sample size of Matt Bush isn't very big either. He's not been around for that long. So I think Leclerc is a guy that he may not get the job right away, but if Matt Bush starts to struggle, I know they got Keon Kilo, who was a guy that everybody liked last year, and he's looked decent so far. But I think that Leclerc's 13.89 K per nine. He's got a mid-90s fastball. I really like what he brings to the table, and he's a guy that I've added in a couple of leagues as well for that reason, that he's helping out a lot of my other categories. So he's a guy you could look at as a little bit more of a longer-term option, but he'll help you out in the short term in a couple places as well.
And he's French. Leclerc. Oh, let me ask you, though, Ron. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, we have a lot of you know, we're hitting a lot of nationalities. We've got Frenchmen, we've got Germans, we've got Venezuelans. I mean, we're global tonight.
We're all encompassing here on the Nasty Cat.
Yes, we are. Yes.
Absolutely. Let me ask you, Ron. I've been thinking about switching to saves and holds. I've never played in that format. I'd like to tinker with it. How do you like that as compared to just like the straight roto with the saves?
The thing I like about it is I feel like a lot of times in roto, I find myself chasing saves. And I think another thing that I like about this holds is, and I was just having a discussion with a friend of mine that plays in the league as well. I think everybody that you, most of the time that you play with, is so trained in their head, I've got to get saves, I got to get saves, I got to get saves. But when you have a saves holds league, if it's the same category, especially, you know, you're going to be right there in that category with guys that aren't closers, that aren't getting saves. And so it tends to be easier for me in that league to find guys I can get holds from, as opposed to trying to find saves out there on the waiver wire, because it seems like everybody's programmed, oh, I got to get those closers, I got to get those saves, but holds have the same value as well. So that's one of the things I like about it, is I don't feel that I have to struggle to look for those like I do saves in some roto leagues some years.
Yeah, I agree. And in my experience with it, by the way, has been that I find myself going after just better pitchers as opposed to chasing the saves. So, for example, Ryan Madsen is on one of my dynasty teams, and he's really good. And guess what? I'm getting value out of him. Whereas if it were just a saves league, he'd probably be on my bench, because who knows what you're going to get out of him. So I personally like it. And I think it's one of those things that leagues should move towards. I'm also an advocate of OBP over average. I don't really like the quality, I don't dislike it, the quality starts over wins, because quality starts is still just kind of an iffy stat. It's better than wins, but until we get a perfect statistic for that, I could care less in that regard.
And real quick too, another thing I like about it that I forgot with the saves holds is, if you have a guy like we mentioned, David Robertson, that's a closer, but maybe Coda Glover, you know, still wins a job, and David Robertson gets dealt to be like the seventh or eighth inning guy, you don't automatically lose that production category from him. You know, if he's getting dealt somewhere else and he's got a different role in the bullpen, he's not going to get saves, but he could still get you some holds. So he doesn't become totally worthless like in leagues where you only have saves and some guy that, you know, that's having an awesome season as a closer who's on a non-contender gets dealt and he's a seventh inning guy and he becomes, you know, a guy that you spend a decent draft pick on possibly. All of a sudden he becomes worthless and you just end up dropping him.
Yeah, and I mean – That's what I really wanted to emphasize is just like the better pitchers are worth more, and that's the way that it should be. Although I will say with saves and holds being worth the same, I fear it's like devaluing the position so much that you can just pick up almost anybody off the waiver wire. So like if I were to have my druthers, I would say that like saves are worth like a full 1 point or like, you know, a full save, and then like holds are 0.5 of whatever a save would be, you know. So it did value the closing position a little bit more, you know, just to get that elite closer. I don't know.
I'm fine with that, too. I think that's okay. Well, and particularly if you look at the numbers, they're obviously going to be more holds and saves in the game. Mm-hmm. So I think that's fine. I have no qualms with that.
Yeah. And then as far as quality starts, I mean, not to get on a whole tangent, but I mean, how hard would it be to add 7 innings and 3 earned runs, say, as a metric or as a stat? Like, I think.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
I think Baseball HQ has at least fiddled with that. I've heard it called a pure quality start, I believe, with them.
Interesting.
So, I mean, how hard would that be really to program it and have that as available as a stat, you know, CBS, Yahoo, all you guys out there. I would like to see that because that's a little bit more harder to maintain. Then you don't have the argument where it's a 450 ERA, which is, you know, a legitimate argument. So, but I still like it better than wins. Kill the win. I got to finish this off here. I did number mine in a certain order, and I'll explain that as I go along. My number one right now is Brad Hand, because Brandon Maurer has been terrible out there in San Diego, and Carter Capps is now on the 60-day DL. He's not going to be back until June at the earliest, as he's had a real tough road recovering in extended spring training. He just can't find his control right now. And Brad Hand has been just awesome. So if they're going to make a change now, I think it's going to be him instead of Buchter, whatever his, however you say that name. So I would be handcuffing Brad Hand number one right now. And then JJ Hoover is the guy that I still like him in the Arizona bullpen. The usage does seem to dictate Archie Bradley, but for, I don't know. My gut is just saying Hoover. Nobody does it like you. And then my number three guy is Joaquin Soria. And I just have him listed as number three because I think the first two guys could take over the closer role without a trade with just poor performance, whereas with Joaquin Soria, pretty sure it's going to be closer to the deadline before he can get a job, and we see Kelvin Herrera on a different team. So that's my logic there. But let us move to the prospect portion of the show, and we've got two guys that we're going to quiz Ron about here. Number one is Gleyber Torres. Ron, tell us a little bit about the young Yankees phenom.
Well, and something I try to do in this article is I try to give, you know, guys that are going to help you in most formats. And I stayed off of Gleyber Torres, you know, because when you look at the rankings of the prospects, him and Yoan Moncada are kind of 1 and 1A on a lot of lists. And so most people know who Gleyber Torres is, but I picked this specific week because he got promoted to AAA. I don't know how fast he's going to be up at the show, but he's clearly shown why he was the guy that was given up for Aroldis Chapman. And, you know, kind of like I alluded to in the article, you know, you think about the impact that Aroldis Chapman had on that Cubs championship, but a lot of baseball people will argue that the Yankees clearly won that trade. And when you look at Torres, you can kind of see why. He's gotten better easily every year that he's been in the minors. The thing I liked about him the most that jumped out off of his stats was his strikeout percentage has gone down while his walk rate has gone up. And so he's kind of shown that patience at the plate. And most people know about Gleyber, you know who he is as well, you know, even casual fans. But I think that, you know, once he's at AAA, I think that yearly people and people that aren't as big into the bigger dynasties, they can start to look at these guys, you know. And the thing I alluded to in the article as well, you know, we talked about it last week with the guys dropping like flies on the DL. I think that knowing who prospects are and knowing guys that could come up and get a call up and impact your team is important every season, but especially this year and especially in yearly leagues, because you could, based upon who you have sitting on the DL or you may have to drop, you may be forced to have to get one of these guys. And Gleyber Torres is a guy that, you know, he's one of the top ones out there. I don't know as far as shortstop, However, I mean, most scouts will say that they think that his athleticism is going to keep him there. They think he's a good enough athlete to play well there, and his fielding percentage has steadily gone up every year that he's been in the minors. It's in the high 90s now. Didi Gregorius, we know he's kind of a defensive wizard, but also he's actually kind of found a way to swing the bat the last couple of seasons, surprisingly. You know, I think he hit over 20 homers last year. He's off to a good start this year. So he could be a bit of a roadblock at shortstop, but when you look at third base with guys like Chase Headley, Ronald Torres being there, and Glaber's played a few games at both second and third this season. So it could be something where they could keep him down. I mean, the Yankees are in first place in that division. And so as long as they're playing well, I don't think that it's a huge need to bring him up. But at the same time, if he starts to kind of figure out AAA pitching, he is fairly young. He could see that call up to be the third baseman. And like we've seen in the past with guys like Manny Machado, you know, they get called up at that young age, and they prove that they need to stick around. So I think he's a guy that if you have room to get him, and like I said earlier, you know, with the DL spots and depending on how big your league is, you may not, but you got to be early on these guys. You can't, you know, see them get called up and then expect for them to be out there, especially with the, you know, with a lot of the people that we play with, they're all over that anyway. So it seemed like kind of a Captain Obvious pick for this column, but at the same time, I wanted to wait till he was a little closer to the show, and so he was able to get called up this week. Second guy that I looked at in the article we alluded to a little bit earlier as well was Brent Honeywell.
Yes, I got to say this, like, he has sort of been my boo. Like, I had him in a bunch of dynasty leagues. I took him before anybody else had heard of him, and I've since traded him away in both leagues, you know, because I was contending the last couple years. So it's sad to see him getting all this hype now, but still, huge Brent Honeywell fan.
Yeah, and the thing that I loved about him, I mean, his numbers are obviously solid. He's looked at as a top, I think, 35 guy, one of the top right-hand prospects. And you always talk about stuff with these guys. He legitimately throws five pitches well. You know, he throws obviously he's got a nice fastball. The curveball is the only one that doesn't grade out as a plus, but he can still use it as an out pitch. The screwball is what he's known for, which you don't hear about a lot of guys being able to throw something like that. He's got a cutter, he's got a changeup, and the thing that I loved about, because I tried to find as many of his highlights as I could, is his delivery looks the same every pitch, and so it's deceptive in that he's not giving those tipping points that, you know, that we kind of talked about, like with Jose Berrios, for example, last season, when a lot of people believe that's what major league hitters were keying on and able to figure out. So I think he needs a little bit more seasoning at AAA, but 351 Ks and 331 in the third innings in the minors, I mean, those are monster numbers. So we'll just have to see what he does. I don't know how soon they're willing to bring him up, because like what we alluded to, you know, with the Rays, is they're a small market team. But one thing that they've been able to do well is bring their prospects along and bring their, especially their pitching up and bring it along. And when you look at the front end of the rotation, they're actually have the sixth lowest ERA in baseball as a team at 3.75. Alex Cobb has looked solid coming back from injury. Jake Odorizzi has looked good as well. Matt Andrees, we said Erasmo Ramirez, they're not guys that you look at as being, you know, power arms that are going to be Cy Young contenders, but they have come together and given them a reliable staff. And so, you know, we look at Cobb and we look at Odorizzi. They're guys, too, that are always talked about as far as trade rumors, because the other side of that small market team, you know, like we've seen with David Price and like we've seen, you know, back in the day with Matt Garza and guys like that, is when they bring them up, they're not able to re-sign them. So they're going to send them off and get something back for them, and that's kind of how they replenish the system. And they've made it kind of an art form. They've been really good at it. So yeah, I think it could possibly take something like that to see him come up, but it just kind of depends on where their season is going as well. I think they're sitting at fourth in division right now. And the offense has been a little bit better than what we expect, but I think that it's going to be one of two things. It's either going to be a trade opening up a spot, or we alluded to Erasmo Ramirez earlier. I think it, you know, maybe him being a starter, it might kind of start to catch up with him and he may not be the guy, but you know, we alluded to Jose De Leon a little bit earlier as well. Brent Honeywell has looked light years ahead of Jose De Leon so far. So I think he's a guy that, kind of like Torres, if you have the roster space to add him, they do have a couple options at AAA, but if he can continue to what he's doing at the lower levels of the minors, he's going to have to be that guy that they're going to have to bring up and see what they have.
Yeah, and I guess he's just a bulldog out there too. Like he'll holler at you. I don't know if he's going to be quite on the level of like a Psycho Z or Jake Peavy, you know, or just a crazy person, something like that. But I, you know, and obviously I've never seen him. I live in North Dakota, but I've heard reports that he is quite the character. So I am very, very excited. I don't, like I mentioned before, I don't know if we see him this year or not, but I'm eagerly anticipating his debut whenever it is. And as usual, I'm going to throw out two real quick deeper league prospects to mention, and you brought it up earlier, Ron, as far as trouble finding sort of the pop-up guys, you know, in deeper dynasty leagues. Most of the guys already owned through the drafts and from prior years. So this one, and Ben, this one might tickle your pickle a little bit. Chris Rodriguez is his name. He was the Angels' fourth round draft pick from last year. Yeah, right-handed pitcher, just 18 years old, 6'2", 190. His fastball sits 91-94, can touch 96. He's already got a feel for the changeup and slider, and he's got good command as well. So it's a very promising arsenal. It's 17-3 strikeout to walk ratio in 11 and a third innings so far this year with a 1.59 ERA. Just a rookie ball, like I said, just 18 years old. So he's got a long ways to go. But come year's end, if he keeps pitching like this, he'll be a top 100 prospect.
And these are the guys to look for in particular, like when you're talking about pop-up guys. Yes, hitters can do it, but you see it more often with pitchers because one tiny thing can make a massive, drastic effect on how they pitch.
Yeah, oh yeah, you get your major league pitching finally, and they're like, move 3 inches to the left on the rubber, and all of a sudden you're so much better. But the second guy that I wanted to mention, he's definitely been around a lot longer, but he gets discounted on the typical prospect lists because I don't know if they lick him. I don't know if he's any good or not. But as far as the lists go, he's a really just crap defender, and that's Kristen Stewart, an outfielder with the Tigers. And I've longtime listeners would know that I don't like the actress Kristen Stewart at all. I quite despise her. But yeah, this outfield prospect with the Tigers is a different story. Horrid defender, like I said. But he's 23 years old. He's approaching his debut, I believe. I think you'll be looking at him either late this year, perhaps next year. Left-handed hitter, second go-around so far at AAA. Over 180 plate appearances, he's slashing .272, .389, .609 with 13 home runs and 2 steals. He really started walking last year. This year he's got a 16% walk rate and just 24% Ks. So that's a manageable K rate, and I like to see that a lot. Very pull-heavy fly ball profile, so just like basically a DH type with a bunch of power. So I would be picking up on him. Like I said, he might just have flown under the radar just because of his lack of being on top 100 prospect list because of the defense. So with that, boys, let us move on to our final segment, and that is weekend streaming. So, Van, you haven't talked for a while. Who do you got to stream this weekend?
I have... Okay, first and foremost, this is not pretty. This weekend did not have a lot of unowned guys.
I agree.
That,
I agree.
For streaming.
Very terrible.
So now that I've got that caveat in, I'm going to go ahead and toss out Josh Tomlin of the Indians. He's going to get to face the Royals, which is great for anybody because the Royals are bad. And guess what? Eric Hosmer, not very good. Who called it? This podcast. So anyway, I like Tomlin.
Aside from Ron.
Well, yeah. Sure. So anyway, Tomlin, I kind of like here. He's got some past success. I don't necessarily know that happens this year, but again, facing the Royals is great. And then I think we say this every week, but R.A. Dickey is going to get the Giants on Sunday, and they don't hit right-handers that well. He's not going to toss up a complete game shutout with 15 strikeouts, but he can get you some maybe a win, maybe strike out a couple of guys and hopefully not kill your whip. He's in decent shape, so there's a couple of guys I like right there.
Yeah, equally as brutal. In the weeks we've done this, this has definitely been the toughest week to find anything going on. But I usually like to try to get a guy for each day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Friday I found a guy. Saturday I didn't really find anybody, so I kind of cheated and had two Sunday guys. My Friday guy is Dan Straley for the Marlins against the Angels. And when I looked a little bit deeper, Dan Straley at home – only has a 1.95 ERA. Team's only hitting a .121 against him at home. The Angels are only hitting .227 on the road. And kind of like, you know, we were talking about earlier, when you look up the Angels stats, when you look up leaders, it's Mike Trout and pretty much no one else. So if he could pitch around Mike Trout and get everybody, you know, challenge everybody else, it looks like a matchup that seems to be pretty decent. Like I said, Saturday was kind of horrendous. And then Sunday, which, by the way, Australia, I think, is about 25% owned in Yahoo leagues. Our boy, German Marquez against the Cards, 16% owned. And he's at Coors, so he has been pretty decent there, minus the one huge blow up with the Nationals.
By the way,
town,
can we nickname Herman Marquez the Kielbasa, please?
Done.
Okay, I'm all good. For any sausage related jokes. That's great.
Absolutely. Done.
We've been woefully devoid of sausage ish jokes, I feel.
Yeah, I like it.
Okay.
Here we go. We could even call him the Coors Kielbasa.
Ooh,
I like
it.
That.
Yep. Yes.
Good. The Coors exactly Kielbasa. Right. Yeah. All right.
And the other guy I had real quick, Van already touched on him, but I had R.A. Dickey as well. The main reason I had him in there is the Giants are 29th in runs scored. So he might not be, you know, going to give you a complete game shutout, but he's only 5% owned and he's going against an offense that is the opposite of good. So,
and it's on it's on Sunday, right?
Yes, it is on Sunday.
So that means maybe Posey gets an off day, so there are only good hitters out of the lineup. That'd be fine.
Yes, could be.
There you go. Yeah, and I will say all of my starters are from Sunday, so I could not find anything on Friday and Saturday that I really liked, and so I'm going. And I didn't look up the ownership of these guys. Joe Ross, I don't know his ownership. He just got called up again. Maybe it's high.
I want to say it was somewhere around 50% because I was eyeing him and I was shocked how high it was. Like, I want to say in the 40s or 50s.
That does surprise me. I thought it would be a little bit lower, but he gets the Padres on Sunday. Definitely throwing him out there. Amir Garrett against the Phillies also on Sunday, even though he was roughed up last time. The Phillies have been really bad lately. And then Jordan Montgomery home against Oakland. I still like Montgomery. He's given up too many runs so far, but I'm hanging on. And obviously Oakland isn't scaring anybody. So Ron, this is it. What are you working on this week?
I'm hoping to Saturday. I believe I make my debut on Fantastics, and then you'll get the on deck circle with me over at Big Guy Fantasy Sports each week. And real quick before we move on, I wanted to throw this out there, and I wanted to throw this out there last week, and I forgot. You know, us as being, you know, we talk about these things all the time, and we use these descriptors for these different pitchers and different hitters. And one of the things that I find a lot of people saying are they call guys dumpster fires and tire fires and gas cans. And I find myself doing the same thing. So what I want our listeners to do is I would like for them to either tweet at the Nasty Cast or tweet at us. I want to come up with some different descriptors for bad performances that aren't those three.
Nice.
So I want people to fire those off at us and see what we can come up with. So
yeah, that's out there. That's good. And then I will also use it in my Fantastics writing because we do talk a little bit of DFS there. So that'll be fun. Yeah, I've been using the word pinata. I've been working that in a little bit late because I've been sick of those old descriptors. So yeah, what about you, Van? What do you got going on this week?
Well, obviously, I've just joined Big Guy Fantasy Sports. And for those who don't know, I am, in fact, a big guy at 6'4", so I'll fit in. You can find my writing work there. I'm doing the hold or fold column. So that's kind of like our legit or quit, or like done or fun on the Backup Catcher podcast, the other podcast I'm on. And you can also find my other stuff at butuinc.com, where I put up videos and writings and stupid things. So you can see all that stuff. But yeah, excited to be part of the BGFS family. Maybe we can all have a virtual hug together at some point, and it'll be great.
Only if you're slathered in mustard.
When am I not? Let's just say that.
Good. I'm all on board then. Yeah, you can find my work at BGFS. You can find my work at Fantastics. And I believe if I'm not too hungover on Sunday, I'll be making an appearance on SiriusXM with those Fantastics folks. So until next time, folks, don't forget to get your gas can replacement words, adjectives, whatever part of the English language that is. Get it into us on Twitter. Until next time, folks, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.
real quick, A-side. Yeah, so I was playing in high school, and I got hit by a pitch and broke my hamate bone in my left hand. And it's about a 6-week recovery time. And they said, you know, they're worthless. You don't really need them. So if you want, while you're on the shelf, let's just take the other one out. So I had surgery on both wrists at the same time, which sucked because I couldn't do anything. But I never, ever had trouble with it again, of course.
Did you masturbate with your feet?
Well, yeah. Is there another way to do that? I just grind up against whatever is nearby.
You're assuming he didn't. You're assuming he didn't do that anyway.
That's exactly. True. That is a good point. I mean, I've heard I would just like take a watermelon and cut a hole in it and glue it on the table so it doesn't move around.
Sure. Yeah.
Anyway, okay, I'll bring us back in.